This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jin Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of September 30th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday morning is my buddy Jim Allen on championship week. What's happening, dude?
Feeling like a champion.
I wish I could say you were looking like one, but I can't see you.
Yeah. Well, that's
I'm going to hide behind that because I did get a glimpse earlier.
Yeah. No, it's early. I'm just, you know, weekends here, and it means there's some things that aren't moving. Give you time to reflect on the things that you can't catch up to. But
no comment.
Yeah, I mean, it's like last weekend was really nice because I had a day off on Saturday, and I'm going like, wow, I put out like 5 blog posts. Mm-hmm. And did a newsletter, and I'm going, wow, I'm on top of things. Sunday I got stuff done, and now I'm going like, how is that possible?
I have those days, but I'm so busy these days, I don't even remember what those feel like. So anyway, on this week's show, we've got a chat with Tyler Austin of DNA. We look at the PL-winning Hawks and the CL-winning Giants. We talk playoff race, rocking with Roki, and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I went out to Tokyo Dome a while back, and I talked to JBW, as you know, JB Wendelken. But I also had some time with Tyler Austin again that day. So this is the second time he has been on this season, and he's in year 5 in Japan with Yokohama. And he has appeared in, I guess, well, he's playing a lot of games, number one. And he has been fairly healthy, except for one incident when the camera went diving at a foul ball. He missed a little bit of time then, and he missed a little bit of time before that. But pretty much he's really had a hot summer and has been doing really well. And he appeared, I guess his career high was 107 games in 2021. But injuries really have ravaged his field time in most of his seasons. But he's about to notch game number 100 this year, and that's a big deal for him. And he said the team has an option for next year. So we'll see how that goes in the offseason. But he has really been one of the reasons the Bay Stars are competing for a playoff spot. And they have a really good chance. They're in good position, thanks in part to the Hiroshima Carp, you know, being efficient, forgetting how to swim. But anyway, this season, Austin has put up career highs in runs, hits, doubles, triples, total bases, and average. And it was really nice to see him again and have this conversation at Tokyo Dome. And hopefully we'll be seeing the Bay Stars in the CLCS. But let's take a listen to Tyler Austin. All right, we're here with Tyler Austin of the Bay Stars. Thank you very much for coming and joining us a second time this season. And hopefully we'll see you in the playoffs in Yokohama.
Hopefully.
Yeah. All right. So how do you like this playoff race?
Man, it's been fun. You know, we've been playing really good baseball this last, couple weeks. And, you know, we still got a lot of room to make up. So we got to continue to play well. And, you know, like I said all year, like leave everything on the field and, you know, hopefully good things happen.
I've heard others describe September pressure. What's it like for you?
It's just another game. For me, that's the way I view it. You know, like I play every single, I feel like I try to play every single game, you know, leave it all out on the field. And so for me, there's no pressure. We just got to continue to play well and you know, put some wins on the board.
I bet you say that to all the guys.
Now. yeah, I really do, believe it or not. No. But that's how I play the game, man. Like I view, you know, April games as just as important as September. So for me, like, I don't change anything. Truly, I really don't. Like I'm gonna give you everything I got every day, and you know, whatever happens, happens.
Look, I tell people before, I don't care if I'm playing my sister or whoever it is. If you're on the court, I'm there to win. Right. So, because I don't like losing.
No doubt.
Had an explosive summer. What helped you find consistency?
I've been just playing. You know, I think it was you know, being in the lineup every day. Body was feeling, for the most part, all year, it felt pretty good. So. Yeah, I think that was the biggest thing. You know, I haven't played in 2 years, so getting those reps and consistent at bats every single day, I feel like that's been a huge contributor into the season.
Now it's September now, and the race is tight.
Yep.
Now, how often do you find yourself looking or knowing about the standings? Come on now.
I mean, to be honest with you, I check pretty regularly. I check to see if the, you know, when we're not playing the Giants, if they win, I check to see if the Carp win. I check on the Tigers as well. You know, I check on pretty much every team, to be honest with you. So I know pretty much where we're at all times.
Now, there's a thing, right, in the Central League in particular, because you've got two teams that really, they're not bad teams, they just have really bad records. So how do you avoid falling into the trap of, okay, we're playing a last place team or a fifth place team tonight, so we got this?
You know,
this.
Like you just said, man, those are really, really good teams, man. Like, I don't view those teams as last place teams, man. They're really talented. They got unbelievable pitching and hitting and defense as well. So, you know, when we play those guys, for me, I can speak for myself. I view every team as the same. You know, like we got to win today and not worry about anything else. So that's kind of been my mindset all year. So we'll, you know, take those games as, you know, just as important as any other game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Jim and I spoke on a recent show and we talked about how difficult it is to win a game in the Central League every night. I mean, it's really, really a challenge.
It really is.
Especially after a game you guys lost last night that ended up in extra innings and stuff. Like, how do you just deal with that kind of, you know, up and down if you're going to be looking at the standings?
You know, it really is tough when you look at the season as a whole. I feel like every team is right in the mix of it every day, every single day, right? Like, winning a game here, like you just said, is extremely difficult. There's a lot of talent in our division, and you know, yesterday's game was tough, but you know, we gotta wash our hands of it and come out and try to play a good game today and get a dub.
All right, now what's your view of rookie Ryuki Watarai? He has a big personality, yep. But what does he need to work on in terms of being a consistent pro?
Well, I think he's a special player. I've said that all year. I think he's a special talent. I think he is. I personally love being around him and his personality. I love being around guys like him that are, you know, really, I guess, charismatic and you know, want to be out there and high energy. I love being around that. You know, I'm not a young man anymore. So, you know, feeding off.
He says to the old dude.
Yeah. No, but in baseball terms, I'm no, I know. You know, so I love being around guys like him and you know, Shion as well, Matsuo, and you know, both of those guys are, I feel like, pretty similar personalities when it comes to you know, the way they act. So I enjoy being around them. I think they bring a lot of energy. For Walter, I think, and Sean, and really a lot of guys, it's about consistent playing time, man. I think, you know, once you figure out how you need to go about it every single day, I think, you know, they're going to be special players in this league for a long time.
All right, I do want to talk about Shohei Ohtani just because you spent time in the bigs.
Yep.
Is he making the big leagues look like high school baseball?
Man, it's crazy, man. God, you know. I've been fortunate enough to play against him in the big leagues, and man, it's different. It's different than anything else you're going to see, right? Like, he's on another planet when it comes to the sport of baseball, and it's fun to watch.
What do you think of him, what he's doing? I mean,
it's incredible. You know what him and Judge both are doing, right? Like, I was fortunate enough to be around Judge a lot, and, you know, for the watching those two guys from afar now, it's God, it's hard to even describe what they're doing. And they really do, both of them, and a lot of guys really, for that matter. But those two guys in particular, they make the game look easy day in and day out. And, you know, it's special to watch.
Now, when Ohtani went over to the States, you know, I don't think anybody had even 40 home runs, you know, thinking he was going to be a 40 home run hitter or anything. Now he's approaching 50-50. Yep. What's your opinion of the 50-50?
It's crazy, right? It's crazy. You think of that those numbers and you're like, wow, there's no way that happens, right? And then you see a guy like Ohtani do it. It's pretty special. But if you go back and look at his, you know, his career in the big leagues, he's made incredible adjustments. You know, he's just an incredible athlete. So I feel like if there was somebody to do it would be him, right? So it's pretty special.
All right, you guys have a special ending to the season, all right?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Good talking to you, brother.
Yeah, good talking. Good seeing you. All right. So yeah, I love hearing from Tyler again, and you know, you can tell that his chat is slightly dated, in that we spoke before the Bay Stars were kind of sniffing around. At the time, they were sniffing around second place, and they were in good position, but they have had some games that they regret probably since then. But anyway, what stood out to you in this chat?
Well, I was very glad to hear this because, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, we were talking about before the show about looking things up and looking up objective data. And then, you know, because I tend to be a researcher. And then when you find it, you go, yes, that's what I'm talking about. You know, it's something clear, something that's easy to explain instead of the typical, you know, typically when you're looking for answers to questions, you get, it could be this or it could be that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tyler basically explained how it is that he's constantly struggling with injuries by, you know, he did it in a way by saying, you know, is when you asked about the postseason and also the, you know, the pressure to be in the pennant race,
mm-hmm.
you know, he said like every game, you know, every game is 100%.
Yes.
And so you can see when people are what they are. And we see Tyler Austin doing his thing, going 100% when in our view, the game is worth maybe 95%.
Mm-hmm.
But he is, you know, he is the play. We are who we are because of the things we do, you know, over and over. You know, people say, oh, well, oh, think of his career if he hadn't been injured all the time. Well, he was injured all the time because of who he was. Those mm-hmm. things are interlocked. They're integral sure. to who he is. And, sure. you know, and we saw this, him doing the splits the other night in mm-hmm. first base. And I'm thinking, dude, wow, that really hurt. He was walking funny for a little bit. And his opponent on first base was going, you're embarrassing men. Stop it. Stop that stuff. You're making us all look bad. so you know, that's who he was, and he pretty much said it loud and clear. And again, that's sort of like the research thing when you've got a hypothesis and you're testing it and you go, bam, there it is. And there was Tyler Austin telling us his philosophy of baseball, and you can really see it. So it's the honesty. Well, I would say the last thing I'd say is he's very self-realized. He knows who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And that was interesting. And the other thing that was interesting was his talking about Yuki Watarai, because we haven't got to see him a lot after his explosive first maybe five games.
Yeah.
That was about that. I mean, the first three games. My friend with Fangraphs was all about to rave about this guy. And I said, he's... You know, if this guy's a big hitter, he's gonna be a big hitter like some combination of Norichika Oki and Masataka Yoshida,
mm-hmm.
a small guy who learns to maximize what he can do from
sure.
the left-handed side of the plate. He's not this guy who's gonna like MLB scouts probably aren't gonna be drooling over him
sure.
until he. You know, actually becomes that player because his physical, his size and potential are not overwhelmingly obvious. So I enjoyed that little bit about him and his, you know, the kind of person he is and a little bit about how he attacks baseball. So,
yeah, I enjoyed that too. I specifically wanted to ask about Watanabe because we haven't seen him recently, but I thought, you know, what kind of guy is he? Is he the same guy we see in front of the camera when the doors are closed in the locker room?
Mm-hmm.
And getting that confirmation was cool. I mean, it was, you know, you want a guy like that to be that way all the time. Yeah, I had teammates like that who are always excited and mostly on the bench, but the towel wavers and the pom-pom guys. And they're mm-hmm. making a lot of noise. They might not be doing everything, but they keep, you know, they keep everybody else focused and they keep everybody else mentally on their toes. And it's good to have that guy around. So it was good, you know, just hearing that was the way that guy was. But I just love Tyler saying, you know, every game I go out there the same, you know, I don't try to make too much about April games and don't try to make too much about September games, even though they are different. If you're making too much, you know, that's why I phrased the question the way I did. And I've heard people talk about September games. I've heard people say they can't sleep. They can't eat, you know, as they usually do. They're just tense all the time. And just to hear Tyler say, yeah, well, I mean, I'm not going to be more tense because there's going to be another game tomorrow, essentially. So
until there isn't,
that's correct. But during the regular season, yeah, that's basically what's happening. You're going to have another game the next day. So loved hearing that. Loved hearing him, just talk about the approach that he goes through. Talking about these games. So that was the biggest takeaway for me. And I'm just glad he has been relatively healthy and very productive. Seeing him, you know, almost carry the team at times, carry the offense, and he's been very clutch. He's been clutch in late game situations. It's just really nice to see. And he's such a great guy, and he always takes time to say hi, and he asks not just how you doing, but, you know, how's the family, how are your physical ailments and and all those things. Cause I do the same.
Yeah. Well, he's tuned into that one.
Well, yeah, I think he knows about the physical ailments. So that all plays a role, but yeah, just great guy, and hoping that he has proved enough that the Bay Stars want to stick with him and use that option.
Well, I think, yeah, unless it's got like a poison pill, $5 million kicker or something, you suspect they will. They'll be eager because, geez, if let's say he's hurt again, which is entirely feasible, then he misses half a season. His half seasons are pretty darn good.
Yes.
And the Bay Stars have kind of they've got a depth issue in the outfield. You know, they've got guys that can play, and they need to petition NPB to have 10-man rosters on the field, put four outfielders out there because they need them. They could use them. So I think they'll be like, good, if we get 50% of him, that's really good.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. I'm not sure that's going to happen anytime soon.
No, so I know
it is not.
Come up
with an actual plan, but yeah.
No, it is not. unless as things go, you know, we're barreling as we barrel through the championships. We're looking very much. We keep saying for the first time in 4 years this last week. And if we're going back to where we were 4 years ago, we may hear the Giants managers screaming about how the CL can't compete unless it has a DH.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Well, we won't hear that from the Giants since they just won the title. So I guess
we'll
for a little while.
Well, we heard it the last time they got swept twice in the Japan Series 2 years in a row. So four years ago.
Yeah,
hopefully
we won't hear it. So let's talk about, let's make a four-seam transition. Thank you again, Tyler. Always fun talking to you. Let's make that four-seam transition and talk about our league champion. So like I said before, it was championship week. Both leagues get settled in the final full week of the season. Both champions have first-year managers who were just, to me, rock steady. One in the face of a lot of adversity, the other in the face of a lot of pressure and scrutiny and questioning and a few injuries here and there, every team that experiences, but I think the Giants actually are relatively healthy. We saw the Hawks lose Yuki Yanagita, who was a MVP candidate, and he's down. And I did see him the other day on TV, and he was walking fine, and they said that he's starting to play. I'm not sure if they said play games or just play.
Yeah, I think he is playing. He might be playing on the third team where they play amateur stuff.
Correct. So anyway, let's start with the Hawks in the Pacific League. Way back in the old days on Monday, September 23rd, they beat up on the Oryx Buffaloes 9-4. So by the way, they had a three-peat in the PL. I somehow last week forgot and called it a back-to-back, so apologies for that. But it's a three-peat. The Hawks wrapped this thing up with a team of backups, replacements, unproven, inexperienced players. I think it's very impressive when you stop and think about it. I don't know any level at which the Hawks didn't suffer some kind of injury that was threatening, threatening to ruin the whole thing or throw a monkey wrench in the whole thing. And we have seen Kensuke Kondo on crutches and with a boot and all this other stuff since he got injured. And I don't know if he's going to be playing in the playoffs. And yet they have figured out how to plug and play some of these guys. And they don't have a huge power hitter. They really don't have an MVP type candidate out there on the with the bat.
No, Kondo. Kondo's definitely that was an MVP season.
Yeah,
Kondo.
I suppose, but it's not. Yeah, he was approaching. Yeah, I guess he had a lot of home runs, but yeah, it's not easily come to mind. It's not the first thing. He's not the first player that comes to mind. I think we might see two pitchers in both leagues be the MVP. Did you look into the numbers? Did you see anything?
Well, you know, as you know, we were talking about the effect of the ball last year. And I don't know if I mentioned, I certainly wrote about it, but the creator of DeltaGraphs, the digital data website and NPB Japan Pro Baseball analytics website said, it's not, I think very, very clearly that, you know, when the ball doesn't fly as it didn't fly really, I mean, I'm not to the point saying, I don't care. If you tell me, oh, the ball wasn't dead, but I'm pretty much there because the data is, you know, when people were screaming about it, this thing in 2011, 13 years ago, when people were screaming bloody murder about it, and it was so obvious, the ball was far deader this year than it was in 2000. It went from 2010 to 2011. The reason people aren't screaming about it is because it lacked the political clout of trying to eject the commissioner. But so without that, it wasn't a huge issue. People saw it anyway. So my point being that there's no mistaking that the ball was different and the ball's been different.
Sure.
Because they haven't been making the stadiums progressively worse. They haven't been raising the mounds progressively higher.
Sure they have. You just haven't seen it. No, I understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
No reports on it.
Put your red hat on for that one. Okay. So basically, it's pretty much, it's very plain. Now, how it happened is another issue. That's not plain. But how the ball got beat different, that's not plain. But Mr. Okada, the founder of DeltaGraphs, said, look, when balls don't fly, it takes a chunk out of teams that were built for, you know, that had a power component.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes pitching and defense really, really important. Now, the Hawks, pitching was the big question mark coming into the season. And Hiroki Kokubo, the first-year manager, said one day, it might have been the first day of spring camp, he says, you hitters just hit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what you do because I know you're going to do it. I'm going to spend the whole camp spring training with the pitchers because they're like wicked stepchildren, and I gotta make sure they're doing something. And the pitching turned out, the Hawks pitching was not the best in Japan, but the defense, they might be the best defensive team in Japan since the Chunichi Dragons from 2004 to 2007.
Really?
Yeah. And the Fighters, yeah, they're in that group. They're approaching. I think those teams were better. I don't know if they were better, but they were better relative to the league.
Sure.
The Fighters teams, we were coming out of a high offense era in which teams were substitute, you know, we're playing a lot of guys who really couldn't field.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the Fighters and the Dragons, you know, just like all-star fielding teams. It was amazing. It was so much fun because I'm a defense guy. And the Hawks are probably, the Hawks defensively, with the exception of the catching and the base stealing side, base stealing prevention, they're probably the best defensive team I've seen in NPB in about 5 years.
All right.
And the pitching was adequate. You know, the pitching was better than average. And that combination was huge.
Right. Okay. I mean, yeah, they score their share of runs. They hit, I guess they're tied for the league lead with the Fighters in terms of home runs. They hit for average as a team. They were leading the Pacific League in runs scored. So they do a lot of things.
Oh, sure. Yeah. The offense, I'm not saying the offense was, because the offense good, and your point about them bringing guys up. And I think the big name there, well, I should say the little name, because we weren't all that familiar with it, was Tomoyo Masaki, was a guy who'd just been toiling around. He had a few cups of coffee with the big league team, but you know, they plugged him in, and as you said, they plugged him in and he played.
Yeah.
And Odoya Kurihara coming back his first good season in 3 years.
Mm-hmm. And
I mean, he had a good season, like, either last year or the year before. It was just only worth, 30 games.
Right. And then Tatsuru Yanagimachi, has really, they had to have a Yanagi in there somewhere. So
sure. He did that last year. So this year wasn't really a surprise.
But it is one thing to do it when you're really, really trying to prove yourself. And then another thing to do it when the team's counting on you or looking
that's
for someone
true.
To fill a, to
yeah,
fill
that's
a void.
True.
And that's that was certainly the case this time. They were looking,
and of course, they got the power component from Hitoki Yamakawa.
Yeah,
so
they've had a lot of guys step up, but they've also, and you said the pitching. You talked about the pitching, and I think Kohei Arihara, obviously winning a bunch of games. He had a game, a victory kind of erased the other day, but just missed the 14th.
I think
he's among the top, the winningest pitchers in the Pacific League. And he hasn't really been gaudy about it. It hasn't been like he's gone out there and dominated the whole season. He just put together a lot of quality starts, and they scored runs like they do. And they're making him look good. So I'm thinking, because I'm looking around, and you say Kensuke Kondo for MVP.
I think he was. Hands down, I think he was the most valuable player in the league. But is he going to win it? No.
He's got to get the votes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'll vote for him, but that's only one vote.
Yeah, well, I would vote for him too, but I'm just thinking, the league needs, or the media needs sexy numbers, and it has to be obvious, and you look at, what year is this? Year 20? We're trying to figure out, for me at least, trying to figure out what Japan is thinking in terms of what's important, what an MVP looks like, and
yeah, I mean, Kensuke Kondo was the MVP last year. I mean, there was nobody in the league who was as good as him, but, he ain't going to get it when the Hawks don't win, so.
Yes, yes. So that should be interesting. But just a good job. I think the other thing about Hiroki Kokubo, just a steady guy. He's not too high, he's not too low.
Yes.
And what I really like about him is this. He's just in the dugout. There were some times where he looked exasperated at some of the plays that, or
sure,
something that was happening, but
that's human.
Few and far between. And also, he just said, "Well, I'll just write that down in my little book that you didn't get the job done, or I'll write down in my book that you did get the job done and how." And I think that a lot of times observers tend to look at the what and not the process. And I always try to emphasize that the managers and the teams, they're looking at the process. A guy might go hitless for a week, but he scolded, five balls each game, once each game. He's got one really hard hit ball each game in a crucial situation. There just happened to be a stupid defender standing in front of him or in front of the ball, and so he ends up not coming up with a hit. But the process was good. Everything was good. Just the result was bad. And I think we saw a lot of the Hawks taking note of those things and putting the players out there. Like, sometimes I would look at the lineup and think, well, look at these averages. What do they expect to do today? How do they expect to score a run? But, short of doing big Bossian type things, they were able to produce a lot of runs. And it wasn't always via the home run. It was just with smart, good, calculated and precise baseball. And I think that's a reflection of a quality manager, Mr. Tatsunami. And I think we saw that even with a first year guy. And it's great that he had experience with Samurai Japan first coming in and experiencing all that pressure and managing big games, because those are essentially playoff games when you're out there. So great job by the Hawks. I Carter Stewart on and talk to him.
I think that was really important, and I think when we get to it, Hiroki Koko definitely had gotten over. I mean, we saw what he did with Samurai Japan and what he couldn't do when he started. When they just said, "Hey, you manage the high. We know you've never coached or managed, but we want you to have the highest pressure job in Japan."
Yes,
and yeah, thanks, boss. So the thing though that got me was more or less exactly what you said. He's human, and so of course, yeah, he's gonna make a face now and then. I mean, everybody did that. I don't know a manager who never basically looked completely emotionless. But I think the thing, and I will get to this with Shinosuke Abe, is that they're both guys who've now been waiting for this job for a couple of years. Both of them came after being the farm team manager.
Mm-hmm.
And they both had their ways to succeed without being, you know, sort of, in Japan, you have to navigate not only the task of winning, And if you're Hiromitsu Ochiai or you're Katsuya Nomura, that involves kind of stepping on as many toes as you can and proving that you really don't care what anybody thinks.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So that if that's your way, that's part of who you are. And, you know, that's part of who you are. But for Abe and Hiroki Kokubo, that's not the way they are. So they have to navigate that field of, this is how a manager should act. You know, they've got to deal with that image thing
mm-hmm.
while producing on the field. This was a problem for, as you mentioned, it was a serious problem for Mr. Tatsunami, and I think was a question mark about Mr. Shinjo. So yeah, interesting. So I think he managed it in his way, which was being calm, and of course he had the team unlike Abe, whose team had been really underperforming. But they came out of a situation where I think the players were really happy that, not that they were the manager, but that the guy who had been there was no longer the manager.
Uh-huh.
And when I talked to the Hawks guys at the winter meetings, I got this pretty much, what was the team thinking keeping Hiroshi Fujimoto in that job for as long as they did? I loved him. I loved him as a player.
Yeah.
But as a manager, he was pretty much Tatsunami light. He had a way of doing things, and he was going to do it his way because it was, and I'll say, it was the way he believed everybody. I think the way he believed everybody wanted him to manage.
Sure.
And so he became a caricature of the 1980s, 1990s Japanese baseball, you know, hard-headed, by-the-book manager.
Right.
And
the guy we see on Mr. Baseball.
yeah, that was it. He was a caricature, and we saw that before. We saw these other caricature managers, and some of them it was original, and some of it was just completely window dressing. And I think Hara wasn't that, but Hara was a guy also whose act had gotten really cold and stale. And the Giants team, even though they won't say it, you know, I don't know, it's true, but everybody saw that, you know, the blaming the players for your mistakes wasn't gonna fly for a long time.
Gotcha. The Hawks win their 20th championship, league championship, and first
PL time. Championship.
PL championship.
They won two before the PL was formed. So.
And then it was the first time in 4 years, and also the first time in 4 years in the Central League, the Giants finished off their 39th overall league championship. So almost twice as many as the Hawks. And they did that on Saturday. With first-year manager Shinosuke Abe. In year 90, the Giants are celebrating their 90th year. And so a lot of numbers thrown out there. But I can't even begin to describe what we have seen with the Hiroshima Carp. And I think before we went on, Mike, you and I were talking about the fact that we really liked what we were seeing from them about a month ago, and they're 5-19 this month. So it's I don't know, it's one of the all-time collapses in my mind. Anyone who can recall a bigger last month bed messing, please feel free to chime in. But it has
okay. And all you Cubs fans, don't call it once.
I'm talking about in Japan, though. But yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. We got the Cubs and the Phillies fans are lining up already. So cool it. We're not going to answer any phones from the States.
There you go. So okay. I think that the Carp actually helped catapult the Giants to this title, so to speak, because then obviously the Giants helped themselves. But this was a major collapse. Anyway, let's focus on the Giants because they did win it. And yeah, they were really good. They have been steady all season. They got off to kind of a bumpy start. I remember early on they didn't win some games, and Abe looked like he was going to get run out of town, run out of the dugout. But he didn't really flinch. He made whatever adjustments he needed to make. And another, talk about being steady on the bench. He is another person who just seems, okay, well, you know, we're going to go in each day. We're going to be prepared. We're going to have a plan. And we're going to go out and try to execute those things that we work on all the time. And it's the little things. It's the finer points. It's the detail. Those are the things that are going to get us through. Now, sometimes if you focus on the results, you're not going to get what you want all the time. If you just focus on doing the right thing and playing baseball, everybody likes to say the right way, and the right way is to get on base however you can, and then we'll figure it out from there. Don't worry about what you can do. Just do what I tell you, you know, and we'll get through and we'll win this thing. And it just seemed like that was the plan the whole season. They had a macro view of the season and they didn't micromanage, and they got through, and they're winning the championship for 39th time in Central League. I think it was a masterful job by him.
Yeah, I think it was too. And I'll get to the sort of the subtext to that. But I think you're absolutely right. I think from what we saw from Shinosuke Abe was really what we saw from him as a player, which is boundless preparation. Mm. You know, obviously not the superior skill and intuition as a player, because doesn't really translate to being a manager. But A, of course, he was replacing somebody who was not disliked, as it was the case in Fukuoka, but somebody who people were just waiting for him to go, Tatsunori Hara. Mm-hmm. And the team just really needed something new, and he provided that. He'd been, and moving on, and what you said about, I think, when we saw him flash his temper, it was because you could see that thing of him going to the mound and saying, this is not what we planned. You know, this was, you know, you're not following the plan, you know, and he did that a few times. But he was also very calm and very cool, and, you know, and this is baseball, and, you know, we're doing what we're, you know, we didn't the game the way we were supposed to, more or less. Mm-hmm. It didn't work, but tomorrow we'll come back and we'll do the same thing. And he moved. He took a bold step. One of the things you can do if you're a new guy is take a bold step. He rearranged his infield, and that worked. And not only did he got what he expected, more or less, from Hayato Sakamoto, who I still pretty much infatuated with as a ball player, and more for his role on the team. Moved him, and that's a shortstop to third. It sounds like a really easy transition, but it's hard, because I've talked to a number of people who've done it.
Yeah, well, we're seeing that with Shogo Nakamura and Chiba right now. So yeah,
sure,
it is.
The ball, well, that was second base, and so that's probably,
well, I'm saying middle infield to third.
Yeah, but short, the shortstop to third is because you've got a completely different angle on the ball, and it gets on top of you a little faster. I mean, when the ball's moving 95 miles an hour, a little fast, you know, 10 feet's a lot faster.
Yes.
So it requires different, it requires adjustments, not new skills, but it requires adjustments. And we saw that. We saw some troubles with that. But we'd been watching Sakamoto defensive troubles with lots of little things, just because he was a step slower. Anyway, so that worked out because not only did Makoto Kadowaki look good at short, which he generally did, his batting didn't suffer at all. And Naoki Yoshikawa, who's survived the Tatsunori Hara kill the second baseman purges.
Hashtag
high
of the last 20 years.
They were not just...
They were Stalinist purges, basically. And he was the last guy there, and you wouldn't really expect him to be any good. But he, I think, freed from the pressure, he had his best season ever. I mean, he survived the purges, and now he's going like, oh, you mean I can just play baseball and not have to worry about if I get hurt, they'll forget who I am?
Not just if he gets hurt, if he has a bad day or is out of position for a half a step for
the outfield,
half a second.
The outfield was a kind of a Rubik's Cube, and you know, and he got terrible performances from you know, we had huge slumps. But the other thing, the Giants, okay, and I'll give credit to the Giants organization. First time in, I don't know what, has it been, when's the last time the Giants had a productive hitter? A productive hitting import. You know, it's been a couple of years. It's been a few years.
It's been a minute
since the first baseman that they didn't want because they wanted Abe to play first base, so they shipped him to DeNA where he had
Jose Lopez,
yeah, Celestino, and so he was probably the last really productive player. But they got Elio Hernandez, and they got also. The new guy, Coco Montes. So they got Elio Hernandez and Coco Montes, and they were useful. And that's not a word we typically use with Giants import position players in the last 15 years. So really good. So they got all those things going. And the last thing I want to say is, okay, so I mentioned the Hawks being, you know, pitching and defense were important. The Hawks were a pitching and defense team. The Giants were a pitching and defense team.
Mm-hmm.
Pitching was absolutely wonderful. Nobody was expecting, I think, Tomoyuki Sugano to come out. I mean, that was, Shohei Togo was Shohei Togo, you know, part three. You know, we saw the brilliance, we saw the frustration, we saw the limitations, we saw all the things he could do, as we've seen every year from him.
Yes.
And we got a breakthrough season from Haruto Ishii.
Yep.
The lefty, and Foster Griffin it's stunning how, you know, Foster Griffin's, you know, example A of why win-loss records are very shaky foundations,
mm-hmm.
because he had a tremendous season. He might have been the second best pitcher in the rotation, but his win-loss record was nothing like he's going to put on a postcard and write home about it.
Right.
So all those things, Tai Seota came back. And had a went, you know, he's pretty good when he can pitch, when he's physically able, he's a really good pitcher. And he was at that level he wasn't healthy the whole season, but he was healthy most of the season. And last year he missed most of the season. So all those things went in their favor. And the last thing I would say is about Shinosuke Abe. Shinosuke Abe, he was a master. And what he was, in my mind, and of course, this is the culture side I deal with, I obsess about. He was a master at managing the expectations of what a manager, what a Giants manager should be.
Mm-hmm.
He had all the tough talk before the season, how they were going to train like 50 years ago, and there was going to be blood in the practice. You know, he had all the
blood on the walls in the practice facility.
Yeah, exactly. There was going to be blood and
I don't want vomit. Anybody to hold down their lunch. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were going to train like they hadn't trained in 50 years. And you could hear the curmudgeons were going, oh, finally somebody gets it. And yeah, of course, what they really meant was finally somebody other than Tatsunami gets it, what baseball's really about.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. And he completely did that script. And then we saw in camp starting with the, yeah, I'm the tough guy, I'm the new sheriff in town, and just go about your business and do your job.
Right, right.
And none of the, and you know, he had the talk, which satisfied the need for the old guys to feel important about their era of, you know, the of brutality. Mm-hmm. But he also had the common sense to say this ain't where Japanese baseball are so is, and so he, you know, he talked that talk, and then, you know, he did his own thing, and yes. And credit, that was masterful.
Yes, and I also want to throw in Iori Yamasaki. He did a great job as a starter, and just wanted to say that I heard Masaki Saito. Mm-hmm. On Pro Yaku News say, sure. You know, Sugano has a lot, he has more wins, and he might be the guy everybody's talking about right now, but it was Togo who really was the front guy.
Yeah, he was the guy they expected to be the big guy.
But he was all season.
He was, but he didn't get the big win total because his timing wasn't as good.
Timing. But I mean, again, a lot of times when you're the ace, you're facing ace level opponents. So
also true.
You don't score as many runs. So
also true. But I think Sugano, you know, the thing about Sugano was A, he was healthy for most of the season.
Yes.
And B, his pitches. I you know, he had days when his stuff was really electric, but you know, generally not. But what he had was that command.
Yes.
And his command was just exceptional this year. It's gone. It went, that returned to where it was about 5-6 years ago.
Yes. And I remember watching a game. It happened to be against the Dragons, but someone made an error behind him on a really easy play. I think there were two outs, or there was something. I don't remember the exact situation, so I won't make it up. But someone made an error behind him, and he had to make a bunch of extra pitches, and and I laughed, and I was telling somebody at the office, well, the good thing is it's against the Dragons, so they won't make him pay. And it got to be a pretty hairy situation, but he got out of it, and as he was walking off the mound, he was laughing and smiling with the player who made the error. And I don't remember who it was. I don't think it was anybody, one of the main infielders.
Mm-hmm.
And he was laughing and smiling and joking. I said, yep, that's pitching in against the Dragons. But I saw him continue. This was about, I don't know, June, so that this incident occurred. And then as I watched him the rest of the season, he was like that most of the season.
He was in
hairy situations, but he was laughing and smiling, coming off the mound and getting out of trouble. And he pitched out of trouble a lot.
I saw the same thing happen. Somebody dropped a ball. It was a routine play, and they dropped the ball, and it put a runner on base instead of getting him. He had two on base instead of being out of the inning, and he pointed at his chest and says, I got this,
yeah.
And he looked at his teammate, and he says, no problem. You got my back, I got your back. And, you know, that leadership goes a long way.
Definitely.
So it was his being there and being on the field a lot was probably as big as the, well, of course, when you can't pitch, you're not going to be on the field, but his ability to stay on the field through all those innings was a huge thing for the Giants, because the rotation had been eating up, had been letting the Giants down for years, and caused, you know, I think it might have been the thing that pushed Tatsunarihara over the edge, because we got the last times he was in the postseason, he pretended like he didn't have any starting pitching at all. Every game was a bullpen game after Sugano and Togo. And yes. It was weird. You know, it just made this guy who was mentally vulnerable to, you know, pretend he was. Sorry, that's gonna be. I gotta stop it. I gotta stop picking on him for 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's hard to stop. But and the bullpen, I mean, it's just a masterful job. And the bullpen didn't have any real standout performers. Nobody who came in and was a shutdown guy per se. They had to mix and match. They got their closer back. You talked about Taisei or Ota, whatever you want to call him, but. He came back at the end, and I like that Abe, even in a game that was not a save situation and was going to be the the clincher, he brought out his closer to get the very last out, because that always stays in the digital video vaults, and they always bring it out and say, you know, this team won the championship on this day, and you see that particular pitcher throwing. And I think he wanted that image of his closer out there. And like I always say, these guys have a message that they send to the players positions. And I thought that was really, really telling. And he mentioned it too. He said he's our
closer. Did.
I wanted him out there finishing up the last game. So, or the most important game, or the clinching game. So we got to move on, but I did want to mention more negativity about the Carp, but you can only pick on those guys for so long. Perhaps
you've scaled them pretty thoroughly. I don't think there's much left to pick at.
The 19 losses in a month. I think I was reading an article this morning that said that's a tie for the worst number, or the highest number of losses in a month for the team. And it's sad to see them finish out this way. I love Takahiro Arai, the manager. I think he has done a great job since he has been there. It's just sad to see them fade away like this, but they're going to fade from, I mean, I think when we were talking about them and I said how much I like them, they went from first place now down to fourth place. Now, that's not a huge drop because everything was so tight all season. However, it's the 19 losses, you know, it's not that you dropped out of playoff contention. It's how many games you couldn't finish off, or how you just hit the, I don't even know. I can't make up anything. I'm speechless in terms of how much they dropped there. I can't think of anything snarky to say that's fit for radio. Anyway, 19 losses in a month. That's in a way pretty impressive, but we've got to move on. Let's go rocking with Roki. So he threw Sunday, September 22nd, and this was better. This was better. This was more like...
Yeah, it was one of it. It goes into the bucket of his productive starts.
Yes. 7 innings, 2 runs, 4 hits, a walk, 10 strikeouts, much more along the lines of Roki Sasaki, the guy we... except for the 2 runs, actually. But, I mean, you're going to give up runs sometimes, so that happens.
Sure, sure. I mean, as we mentioned last time, there are games when he didn't, you know, he gave up 3 runs, but it should have been 6.
Correct.
But this was one of those where the score line was a fairly good indicator of how good he was.
Yeah, and he ends up with a 7-2 victory over the Save the Lions. Gave up 2 runs in the first inning right off the bat against the Lions. But as you talked about before, where he maybe is not on his game early on, he is able to make adjustments or figure things out or just get better or put up better results. However you want to phrase it, he was better the rest of the way. And he comes away with a victory. And so that was I'm expecting to see when I watch a Roki Sasaki game and do a Rocking with Roki segment. I don't want to have to keep saying we might have to stop this.
There's always a thing with his games. I mean, they have that, you have to have the red phone ready when you're doing a Roki Sasaki game, because you know, you might be on no hitter alert. At least that's in the back of your mind.
Oh, I thought Batman was going to go.
No, that was the bat phone. This is the red phone. This is the emergency hotline now.
Okay.
Don't worry, Chief O'Hara. We'll take care of you.
How do you remember these things?
I know. Okay. Well, anyway, I think that the two things we've seen, there are 3 things. One is the velocity. And I'm just looking through sort of a summary of his games. And basically, when his fastest pitch isn't 159 kilometers per hour or higher, the games tend not to be as good. Not a huge difference, but that's one thing.
Okay.
Another one is the slider. Throwing the slider a lot has been his big weapon. He threw the slider one of his best games this year. I mean, one of the best games this year was the game against SoftBank on August 30th when he threw it 40 times, most he's thrown. He threw it 38 times the other day.
Mm-hmm.
So he had the velocity. I think his fastest pitch the other day was 159, so that was right on the border. And his control, his command was not I want to say his command was good,
sure,
because it's not really a thing this year, but his command was better than it was acceptable. So those three things, the velocity, the command, and using the sweeper, are pretty much an indicator of when he's on.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he was on. He wasn't on his A game, but his B game is, you know, it's pretty much an A-minus game for everybody else.
Yep. So, and that's good. That's a good sign as this team heads toward the playoffs.
100%.
And again, they got the breaks. The Eagles lost yesterday. Masahiro Tanaka, we saw him. They dusted him off, and he came out and pitched and was ineffective early. But he's a different guy. He's a different guy.
He looked different.
Yeah.
And I don't mean his pitching looked different physically. I don't know if it's a new hairstyle.
I didn't see that.
Or it's a new hairstyle, or he's added muscle.
We haven't seen him in a year.
Yeah, well, that's true. We haven't seen him in almost exactly a year. I think he last pitched in September last year before he had elbow cleaning. And it was elbow cleaning. It wasn't the reason he was out. He had other issues on top of that. I actually saw him in the preseason, and I wanted to talk to him, but he wasn't talking.
The point being that the Eagles lost yesterday. That
they did. He didn't really help them
Shut down that or lock down that final playoff spot, the third one.
Right. So he's back, which I'm glad to see. He looked good at times, and then he looked like he hadn't pitched in a year. Although he's been pitching about the same on the farm team. So
yes. So hopefully we'll see a little bit of him next year. But I was thinking when Aoki retired, I was trying to think of guys who we might see have a surprise retirement. And his name did cross my mind because we haven't seen, you know, that kind of Tanaka. The guy, the last time we saw him pitch well or be effective on the mound, I really don't remember it. Like the guy we used to see.
Was before.
That guy's gone.
Yeah. We've seen probably two or three games since he's come back to Japan where we went, wow, okay, you know, that's what we need to see more of.
Yes.
But it's been a little bit of a, okay, the fastball isn't work. You know, he's had to adopt a new bag of tricks because he isn't the pitcher he used to be.
So maybe next year. Yeah. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, so Tony in Busan. Dude, thank you for the email. You've been on deck. You've been Rumpelstiltskin on deck or something.
Dude.
You've been sitting there on deck.
Dude, I went to sleep 20 years ago and you were there.
Yeah, so thank you so much for waiting. His question is, this is my first season watching NPB games regularly. I have Pacific League TV, great product, though a bit pricey, he puts in parentheses.
Yeah.
This is a game production question. Once a ball is put in play, why do Japanese broadcasts usually cut to a camera on the first base side of the field? Every other game I've ever watched cuts to a camera behind the catcher. Tony, still in Busan. Jim.
Huh? I'm sorry, Tony. I don't know if I had not noticed that.
Don't take my lines, Jim.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I had not noticed that. I do notice there are ways. See, I pay less attention to that than things I actually have to deal with.
Sure.
Which is, of course, you know, my and I'll just make a little rant here. In all these stadiums where they have camera angles that allow you to tell whether a pitch, a vertical angle that allows you to tell you whether the pitch missed the inside or outside corner.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get to see that often enough because very often the camera is being managed by the home team's broadcast company.
Okay.
And so when their pitchers are missing the strike zone, they don't want to show it.
Correct.
That are called strikes.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll show that when the pitch looks to be, the umpire calls it outside and it crosses the corner of the zone. But generally, no, we don't see that often enough, which would be really helpful. And most center field cameras are at about a 10 degree, about a, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 degree angle. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to tell. I mean, sure. I saw a pitch last night from Tomoyuki Sugano that I'm thinking, okay, this one was very close. And then they showed an overhead view and it missed, it probably was out, missed the zone by a few inches.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. But otherwise, I don't notice. What I know is the still images in Japan that are processed for public consumption in my day jobs have been guys swinging the bat and pitchers throwing the ball. And about 5% or guys celebrating. Okay, that's about 95% of the pictures. And the other 5% are of people actually doing things that are unusual, running the bases or fielding, which are the pictures I enjoy the most.
Right. So, yes. Yeah.
And if you go to Tokyo Dome and the last thing, and you see the same thing, if you go to the base of the Japanese Baseball Hall of Fame, they have a huge relief over the door. It's got about 26 players. And of those 26 players, there's one person catching a ball and two people running the bases. The rest are all pitching and hitting.
All right. Well, we're talking about TV, though.
Yeah, right. But I'm just saying that there is that thing. There is a set way of the way the media wants baseball, believes the audience wants to see. And so whatever you see is what these TV producers think. It's more likely than not, it's what they grew accustomed to as kids, what they were ordered to do, and now they're ordering the people to do the same thing over and over and over again. So
Gotcha.
It doesn't surprise me at all that you find it weird.
Yeah. All right, Tony, I must admit doing this podcast has really helped me see how this industry, I guess the presentation industry, if you want to call it that, with video and digital things and movies and podcasting and just putting shows together. Filmmakers, we splice things together, we cut, we edit, and I can often spot inconsistencies and other issues when I'm watching TV shows, or I know how they film certain scenes, and you can see when people do a good job and when they don't do a good job, or you know, they were forced to do, especially with TV shows, because they have limited time sometimes to get these things together to do their seasons. Anyway, Tony attached a couple of examples of angles. One, he had a major league game with Aaron Judge getting a hit to center, and then he had a hit of Chusei Manami of the Fighters fielding a ball in right and throwing home to get a runner. Obviously, the balls were hit to different fields, but I don't know, Tony. I watch a lot of MLB games. A huge amount. I obviously watch a great deal of NPB.
Yeah, we had to put John on an intervention actually a couple of years ago.
Hashtag high heat.
Bring me back my phone. No, give me the iPad. No, TV, a computer. I can watch a game. I can see a game. Somebody pick up a ball and somebody throw it, and somebody try to hit it with a stick. Yeah. There was a danger. I was getting near the red.
But he's
settled down with the twins. Yeah.
He's more self-aware now.
No, it's the twins. It's the twins. I watch a lot of baseball, and I'm just trying to remember the last time I paid attention to that particular aspect, and it never crossed my mind. And ever since we got this question, it has been a couple months, and I've been trying to watch and see what it is that you're talking about. And I'm not seeing it. I know that the balls are hit to different parts of the field. And so sometimes the director or producer, probably the director, is saying, let's go to camera this and that and the other. But not once has it bothered me. It's hard to even remember to watch for it. And when I do, I don't see anything. So everybody, please chime in on x.com and let's help Tony figure this thing out, because I don't get it. I've never noticed it. I don't see it as a problem. I don't care what camera they cut to, as long as I can see the action, as long as I can see what the guys are doing. And so I know, Tony, you've waited all this time and you wanted a great explanation, but I don't have one.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. If you could add one thing, one sort of view to the broadcast, what would it be? So you see the catcher the sign. You see the pitcher standing there looking. They focus on the batter. Is there anything you'd say? Well, I want this. I want to know this.
I would like the overhead view from behind, well, of the plate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
In every stadium. And I know we can't have that. There are some stadiums that are just too old, but I would want it at every stadium. That would be the only change. And I know we can have it at a bunch, and especially up in Hokkaido now. It seems like that's the most precise camera, although they did do a good job at Nagoya Dome as well.
That's
the camera angle I want.
I would like a flash, an overhead flash from behind the plate of where everybody's fielding.
Sure.
You know, just because then you get a picture of, you know, because very often we don't know until we see where the guy's running from, but you don't know where they started. You don't know how they were playing.
That's
and
great.
To me, that's really, well, I'm nuts about that anyway, as people on X know.
Yeah. Well, I would, you had me at I'm nuts. All right.
Hashtag high heat.
Don't touch those nuts.
All right. Thanks so much, Tony, not only for the question, but for your patience and waiting so
Indeed.
Long to get to the question. Anyone else? And like I said, please chime in for TonyOnX.com and hashtag it with a high heat, and I'll handle those and field those as well. And hopefully we can get some answers and get a conclusion on this thing, why this is happening, because it must be bothering Tony something awful, especially if he's going to talk about the cost of PLTV as well. Anyway, hit us up on x.com at JBW Podcast. Send questions via email to yakyujohn@gmail.com or go to the Facebook page and leave us a message there. We've got our champions. We're only waiting for the playoff seats to be settled. Those are pretty much going to be happening very soon. So we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag high heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.